that enthusiasm, Representative Miller, I'll let you move the minutes.
Mr. Chair, I am proud to move the minutes for my last meeting.
Which is March 15th.
March 15th meeting that I looked over extensively.
All right, thank
you.
Good. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The minutes are approved. Today, we have several bills to go through, which we will then lay over. These are all? Okay. These are just informational today. And so, we will begin with House File 2895. Representative Frankie, are you ready to go?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Give us your official introduction and then begin your presentation, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is House File 2895. It's a bonding request for South St. Paul for Seidel's Lake. I'm sure most of you remember that we're on the tour. We stopped by Seidel's Lake for the generous and awesome welcoming of the city of South St. Paul. I have to say it was a very fun time there in South St. Paul. I brought with me the mayor of South St. Paul and Jimmy Francis and several staff. So I will just turn it over to them and let them explain the project to you and why this funding is necessary to help us out in South St. Paul. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon,
welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chris Esser. I'm the Director of Parks and Recreation for the City of South St. Paul. With us also behind me is our City Engineer, Chris Hartzell. So at the heart of this is a combination of engineering and parks project where this is contained within a park right now, Seidel's Lake. That straddles two different communities, the cities of South St. Paul and Emerald Heights. Its watershed extends in the city of West St. Paul, so this really is a regional lake, as we like to see it, if you consider the watershed, and that it straddles two different municipalities. So what we're asking for the request is $781,000 to construct a water lift station to be able to pull the water out of the lake. This Seidel's Lake exists right now as an impaired water body. In the last 10 years, it's gone from a water testing DNR classification from a letter B as in boy to a D as in dog. The water quality has deteriorated that quickly. And why does that happen? It's because basically Seidel's Lake is a dead end. It's a pothole. Once the water enters the lake from that very large watershed between three different communities and beyond, it just stays there. So what that causes is for the lake to bounce as high as 15 feet. It floods the shoreline, sometimes stays flooded for days, sometimes months, depending on if we have a wet season. And so what we're looking for is to be able to pull that water out of the lake, stabilize the shoreline, and be able to create some parks and recreation amenities from around the lake. What would happen with the water being pulled out, it would be treated on its way to the Mississippi River. We have a lot of impaired waterways, as you probably know, in the state of Minnesota. We don't want to add to any impairments for the Mississippi River. So basically, the water would be pulled out, cleaned, sent down our forest main to the Mississippi River, clean, better, and hopefully improve the water quality of this regional asset we have at Seidel's Lake. Are there any questions you may have?
Is there any particular, Mr. Hess, is there any particular level that you want to keep the lake at?
Right now, excuse me, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the DNR has designated a water level, what it should be at. Right now, again, that water level fluctuates as much as 15 feet. So what we want to do is not draw down the lake. We just want to maintain what the DNR has designated at that lake level right now. Seidel's Lake is not a very deep lake. And actually, it used to be a viable fishing lake. If you remember back in the 1990s, with the DNR program that provided fishing piers, where a municipality could pay for half the fishing pier, and the DNR cooperated on that, Seidel's Lake was actually one of the first lakes, and South St. Paul was one of the first communities to receive that grant. Because of what's happening now, what fishing pier has been removed, and the state of the water quality is not sustainable for fish anymore. So we're hoping if we maintain that water lake, that level of the lake, not draw it down, that we'd be able to petition the DNR to stock it once again as the water quality will hopefully improve, be able to create fishing opportunities for people in that level.
Well, thank you. I think when we were there, there was someone fishing that day, but I didn't see evidence of any fish. I have to make a quick apology here. I ended a sentence with the word at. My wife will never forgive me. I should have said a level at which you would like to keep the lake. With that, Representative Bloom.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I noticed part of the benefits and improvements that you talk about is the park, the regular use of the park will be restored in a park master plan improvements. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we do have the City of South St. Paul, we did park master plan. It is, if you have our fact sheet, it's on the back side of the sheet and down in the lower right-hand corner. If you take a look, we have a park master plan we completed in 2005, and what's happened with the lake level, again, when that lake rises up and floods, it erodes the water shoreline area. What we're looking to do is create recreation amenities because it exists as a park right now, so we want to make it an attractive lake, not just for water quality, but for people to come and do recreational activities as they did when I was a child growing up there in South St. Paul. It's a lake I went to, and actually some of my friends swam in that lake. I don't think anybody would dream to do that now. So as an impaired waterway, we want to improve that. But we have a master plan. We're waiting to execute that until we can control the balance of the lake because right now on the east side of the lake, we do have a trail. It's underwater most of the summer. Some of you folks that were probably on the tour may have seen that when that water bounces and fluctuates, it washes over that trail and it becomes inaccessible. So we want to wait to create any improvements until we can control the level of the lake so that all those amenities that can be built around it in a smart way that we won't have to come back and change anything based on any conditions of the lake, that will be able to be stabilized and we'll be able to develop it as a regional park and as connected to a regional trail system.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I know it's a trail I'm certain people will use. I mean, if you get it up and running, you could just see people that were kind of walking that day we were there close by. But obviously this trail comes to a stop, and I know people will use them in the metro here and be popular. I just want to say how impressive it is. Representative Frank, you even got Representative Hansen to wear South St. Paul colors today, so that's right.
Any other questions? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Representative Frank, that was a very fine job that you did on that bill. Do you have any other testifiers, or you want to proceed to your next one?
Anybody else? Good.
I believe we're good, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Representative Frankie, ready to go?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This bill is House File 3712. It is an appropriation for Hennepin County Regional Employment Center Phase 1. The money will actually go to benefit the Avivo program. The Avivo program has led the way in improving well-being for Minnesotans since 1960 through employment, career education and advancement, and chemical and mental health work. They work to decrease racial and other disparities in health, employment, and education, particularly for individuals living in poverty or with little or no economic means. Avivo's employment services, career education, and chemical and mental health services serve more than 19,000 people annually. And that reaches far and wide to include 17 counties within Minnesota. Last year, 6,600 men and women and families entered this treatment program for addiction and mental health issues. They've helped 5,600 people entering the workforce. 80% of the individuals placed in employment retained their jobs for more than 180 days. 81% of the individuals in their career education program completed training. That compares to the national ranking of 59%. 628 individuals achieved industry-recognized and transferable credits that they can use to start their careers. 168 individuals who were homeless were placed in permanent housing. Avivo provides services from 26 different locations with a primary campus that includes chemical and mental health treatment, residential treatment for pregnant and young mothers. Sorry, lost my spot, Mr. Chair. I'll just wrap up with that. I have with me K
Kelly Matters, the CEO of the Avivo Project. I'm bringing this bill forward because I think that this project and these services that Avivo provides is very integral to Minnesota. I've been touring several programs and institutions that do work like Avivo's to deal with addiction, mental health issues, homelessness, and I find that personally I think Avivo is handling things in the right way. The way that they work things and propping people up from all over our state, working to help them get the necessities and the tools that they need to be successful in life, deserves our help in keeping that goal moving forward. So with that, I will turn it over to Kelly Manners.
Welcome. Identify yourself with tape, please.
Thank you, Chairman Erdahl and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelly Matter. I'm the president and CEO of Avivo, formerly Resource. And as Representative Frankie indicated, Avivo served over 19,000 people in 2017 from 26 locations serving Minnesotans in 17 counties since 1960s. We are serving individuals that face the most complex barriers to success, homelessness, deep poverty, addiction, mental illness, long-term joblessness. We are the only organization that pairs chemical and mental health services with employment and career education training. We are licensed and accredited as a post-secondary school. We design programming with and for business partners, short-term skills training programs that lead to jobs upon completion of our training and jobs that are in demand in our economy. We also assign credits and credentials to this training so that once individuals go to work, their credits articulate to MNSCU institutions so they can further their career pathway and their economic sustainability long-term. Sincere thanks to Representative Frankie for sponsoring our bill. Also, I want to note thanks to Hennepin County, who has agreed to be the fiscal sponsor of our bill, and for including us in the House bonding tour this past summer as well. Representative Frankie talked about some of our outcomes. 66, almost 7,000 men, women, and children entered our treatment programs for addiction and mental illness in 2017. We are also the only organization that allows women to bring their children with them to our residential and our outpatient treatment programs, and they're able to bring and live with their children up to age 17. This allows for families to stay together. This allows for women to recover, and it allows for long-term family economic stability paired with the employment and training programs that we provide. We did help 5,600 people get their very first job or, in some instances, a career advancement in 2017. We helped over 3,000 families exit public assistance, or what public assistance, or what's known as MFIP in Minnesota, exit public assistance permanently in 2017. And we've talked about the credentials and the retention rate of employment as well. Our organization is committed to excellence. We're committed to strong outcomes, as we've described. The facilities on our main campus at 1900 Chicago in Hennepin County do not reflect the quality of our services and are starting to hinder our ability to achieve the strong outcomes that we aim for and achieve each year. We serve hundreds of individuals each and every day at this main campus facility, and 55 years of heavy public use has taken its toll. And just this month, our luck ran out on our 60-year-old elevator. It passed away, if you will, and we are needing to make a $200,000 investment in the elevator. The elevator is most used by, we have approximately 50 women and children that utilize our treatment services every day, and mostly women with young children and strollers are accessing our child development center on our second floor. And right now we have a holding station for strollers, and our strongest of our staff are carrying young children up their steps. It's a 3-month wait to fix or replace a very outdated elevator. Additionally, the chiller and the boiler are original to our 60-year-old building. The maintenance costs are high, extremely high, and we are at risk of those, having an untimely death, if you will, as well, while we try to seek bonding support and other fundraising. The other issue is that the technicians that are able to repair these are aging out, and there aren't parts available to fix these old extreme wheel mechanics as well. So the building was built for us in 1960, but as you can imagine, the services we provide and how we provide them have changed dramatically since 1960. It's inadequate to meet our current needs and our need and desire to consolidate services. As I said, we're the only program that brings together chemical and mental health with employment and career education. We're in the process right now. We've got a small grant with a data analytics group that is looking at our treatment population, the 6,600 men and women we serve, and who is most likely to be successful in treatment completion. And what we've learned with early data is that individuals that are employed while they're in treatment and or are involved in our employment programming are more likely to be successful in treatment. That's what we've known anecdotally, but now the data is pairing that out and showing that as well. Demanding that we bring more of our services together. You know, I also just want to mention that at a time when the opioid crisis is crippling our state, Aviva is in a position to step up in an even bigger way than we have, and our facilities also prevent us from doing that as well. We feel a significant community need for Huntington County, and people do come from 17 counties in our state to receive residential treatment program, again, because of the uniqueness of our programming. We're not proud of our space. I did just put in your packets some current state of our facilities. We're not proud of the facilities. They do not meet our needs. They're no longer an asset to the community, of which Aviva is an asset to the community, and they just don't reflect the quality of our services. With pre-designed support, which we're asking for from the legislature this year, we will be able to serve thousands of additional Minnesotans and plan for a facility that will double the current size of our facilities, improve energy efficiency, update our integrated treatment services, expand career education classrooms to bring those on site, improve our reception and our outdoor space. We've got a lot of young people that live with us, and they need better outdoor green space to go run and jump and play in. It will enlarge our current child development center and improve that, as well as expand. We have an artist program for professional artists living with a mental illness. We will be able to bring that programming space into this new facility as well as update all program aspects of the current facility. Thank you, Chair, and all members of the committee. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Natters. And just to clarify to members of the committee, I believe that you made a presentation to us at some point when we were in Minneapolis.
Yes.
And also, Jennifer and I paid a visit to Aviva in your facility. So with that, oh, by the way, how much money are you asking for?
$1.6 million.
$1.6 million. Okay. Representative Hausman.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine are to Ms. Dyson. Just a language one. It seemed to me you told us not long ago that MMD has given us new direction about, you know, that string of words we always use, pre-design, design, construct. Does any of that affect the language of their bill they specifically? There's some new MMD rule.
We'll give Ms. Dyson a moment to look it over.
And then the other one, while she's thinking...
And then promptly respond to us.
I was also told this week, since we've always referenced to a bonding project for a nonprofit, a fiscal agent, I was told now we've got a better term, and that is local owner. Is that something...
Ms.
Dyson. Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, with regard to the language of the bill, there isn't new rules regarding the description of the project. There was a lot of discussion about what is the difference between renovation and construction, but I think we have sorted that out. The fiscal agent thing, that has always been an issue for capital projects because the term fiscal agent implies no further responsibility for a project. When grants are made to a political subdivision for use by a nonprofit, the local government is the responsible owner and has to have legal authority to operate the program so that if and then the lease management agreement with a nonprofit is relatively short term relative to the useful life of the improvements made with the bond proceeds. So there's always been a resistance to referring to fiscal agents, local governments or agencies as fiscal agents, when really they are the owners, operators of the programs in the facilities funded with bond proceeds, but they can enter into the lease management agreement with a nonprofit to operate the program.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, while we're dealing with terminology and getting close to when there will be a bill, could you refresh my memory on working papers and the role that they play with the bond houses?
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I'm not sure what you mean by working papers. The language of the bill is what the law is. If the project is not accurately described in the law itself, then
well, there,
I guess I'm not sure what
there have been a couple of times when we've had issues where something wasn't described in the law, and they look to the working papers, if I recall correctly, to further enhance the description. And I wasn't sure just how that came about. I think if you don't have a quick definition, then we can talk, Mr. Chairman, later.
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, there's always going to be more detail about a project than is in the description. The description should be accurate, but it should not be so detailed that it binds the project unnecessarily. It has to be full enough so that bond counsel can go, yes, this is bondable, and this is the general scope of it. There should be more information about what goes into the project somewhere other than in the law that describes in greater detail, and eventually there has to be great detail about what the project is. But the term working papers, that is not a term that I've heard necessarily with regard to capital projects. So.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we can talk more about that. There have been a couple of instances where I recall where there was discussion about the working papers dealing with capital requests, but while we were dealing with definitions, I thought I would ask about that. But I'll tell you more about what I mean, and then maybe we can get a definition. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Other comments or questions? Do I to conclude, Representative Frankie?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to briefly add that I also toured the Aviva project up there in Minneapolis, and I found that with talking with some of the counselors that work there, some of the people who are getting help there, and the things that I saw and the way that they do it, by making this investment now in a program that I feel hits all the proper benchmarks, is going to pay off to the state tenfold. And with that, I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next couple of bills we'll hear from are Representative Eklund. First up, House File 337.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and while we're getting set up for House File 337, I thought I'd let the chair and committee members know that since this is a North Shore project, we've got a truly iconic tree from the North Shore, so the members will be getting a piece of Betty's pie while we're talking about this project. So. And Representative Gunther informs me that I'm getting better, so that's
Well, this committee has never been
friends before.
Well, I wouldn't use those words, but incentivized to support by food before. But forget that.
They're from me, Representative. So thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 337 is a Stuart River wastewater project. We've got a little bit of a problem with what's going on along Highway 61. combining the Capital Investment Committee made the trip up there last year. We didn't get to hear this project when we were there, but you certainly saw, we tried to point out some of the things that were going on there. So we've got properties developing along the highway, and we've got a septic issue along there. The soils are poor. It's either clay or rock, and you can't do a good septic system, whether it is a septic tank or a mound system on those type of soils. Another one we'll have, I have a couple testifiers here to talk about is we've got highway safety. There's been a couple fatalities near the Silver Creek tunnel, and I've got the MnDOT engineer from District 1, Dwayne Hill, will come and talk about what they want to do. And then with the septic problems that we're having, we're putting some businesses and property owners at risk. And we certainly want to keep Lake Superior clean and make sure that we can try to do this project in line with what MnDOT's plans are for Highway 61. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mike Roops. Mike is a township supervisor from the township of Silver Creek.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Mike Hoops and I'm a Town of Silver Creek supervisor. I've been a supervisor there for the past 17 years. Prior to retirement, I was a state park supervisor for 26 years. And I acquired a wastewater operator's license while I was during my career in parks. And I'm here to talk about a crisis, and that sewage is entering Lake Superior. I really appreciate this opportunity to present the Stewart River Wastewater Project, which can best be described as that area beginning at the east end of the city of Two Harbors and terminating at the first tunnel, and it's a distance of approximately 4 miles. It includes all the properties that are covered by the North Shore Management Board boundaries, which is roughly the width of a 40 or a quarter mile from the shore of Lake Superior. I recognize the significant need across our great state for wastewater infrastructure. I just spent 3 days at the World Water Conference and talking to other operators and the needs across the state. This project is unique in nature. It requires additional funding beyond the capacity of the Public Facilities Authority programs. And so I'm here asking for your support for the project. Our township is unique. It is located along the shore of Lake Superior. We have huge bedrock outcroppings, pristine trout streams, Gooseberry Falls State Park, part of Split Rock Lighthouse State Park, Flood Bay Wayside Rest, Twin Points Boat Access, and miles of Lake Superior shoreline. About 25 years ago, the township identified two areas of special concern, Castle Danger near Gooseberry Falls State Park and the Stewart River area on the west end of the town. Both were identified as having significant development but lacked adequate wastewater infrastructure, and individual septic systems were failing, resulting in threats to public health and environment. In 2000, we successfully completed construction of the Castle Danger Wastewater Collection and Treatment System, and it has been operating well for the last 18 years. It has several awards for the quality of water that we've put out there. We then turned our attention to Stewart River. Over the past 10 years, the town has invested approximately $250,000 in preliminary engineering reports, environmental studies, wetland delineation, survey, and planning efforts. We created the Stewart River Wastewater Subordinate Service District. The problem at Stewart River is threefold. Lake Superior is receiving partially treated and, in some cases, raw wastewater from failing systems. Homes are located between Highway 61 and Lake Superior. They're built on ledge rock overlaying a thin layer of heavy clay soils. Neither the rock nor the clay has the ability to treat sewage prior to entering Lake Superior. Second, property values have been impacted and businesses like Betty's Pies are at risk because they're forced to install holding tanks when systems go into failure and are detected. Holding tanks require pumping and hauling when used at significant cost to homeowners and even a greater cost to our businesses. Third, this four-mile stretch of Highway 61 has minimal shoulder width and poor sight lines in most areas. As you will hear from MnDOT District 1 Engineer Dwayne Hill, who is with me today, MnDOT cannot adequately repair this road because of the many
septic systems that encroach on the right-of-way. There's just not enough space to put a septic system between the highway and the lake shore. The solution has been identified, but it comes at a price. Our biggest challenge is the collection system. The linear nature of this project has properties spread out. The length is substantial, and it's through bedrock. Collection system cost is about 75% of our overall construction budget. We look to exhaust all funding sources, including the town taking on $3 million in debt assessed to residents and businesses.
Thank you.
We're not asking for bonding dollars to cover $18 million, but $8.6 million. Understandably, $18 million seems high for wastewater treatment, but when spread over 300 equivalent connections, the price per unit becomes about $60,000 per connection. Other wastewater projects across the state are in that price range and higher. We can provide a solution long-term to the wastewater problems found in the Stewart River area. The town of Silver Creek has proven that we can successfully own, operate, and manage a wastewater treatment plant. As a town board, we didn't plan to become wastewater utility, but we realize our community needs leadership and infrastructure to provide for our citizens and tourists who visit this area in a great part of our state. We need to stop polluting Lake Superior and improve the safety for motorists and the traveling public on Highway 61. I'm asking for your help in this task. I want to thank you in advance, Mr. Chair and committee members, and I'll be happy to answer questions.
Mr. Hoots?
Yeah.
In looking at the information you provided us and the bill, the bill asks for $7,550,000, and you are saying you need $8,600,000. So I'm guessing the bill will need to be amended at some point?
We had an amendment in and brought that up from 7.5 to 8.6 with the inflation factor. I'm not sure where that fell out.
But just so we are clear, the number
so
that you
the
that
number
you
need is 8.6.
8.6.
Yes.
Okay. Where did you say Betty's Pie was located again?
Betty's Pies is located right at the corner of County Road 3 and Highway 61.
Next bonding trip, we may have to keep that in mind. Thank you, Representative Eklund, for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other comments, questions on the Silver Lake? Representative Detmer?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know Greg Hall?
I do.
Okay. Please make sure you greet him for me.
I will do that.
Pastor Greg Hall, too.
Pastor Greg Hall.
And also my wife and I, we own a place up in Silver Bay. So we come through the tunnels there all the time. And also a couple of years ago, Greg was down here, and he briefed me on this project. And it's a good project. I hope we can get something going on this project. So, and my question is, when we go through the tunnel, do rocks ever fall out of there? I see them laying on the highway sometimes.
I have never seen one fall, but okay. I know they fall. And Duane Hill, our district engineer, can certainly address that much better than I can.
Okay. What steps are being taken on that, on the tunnel there with the rocks? I know this type of weather, with the frosting and the heating and stuff like that, it does have an effect.
So, Mr. Please identify yourself.
Can I answer? Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Duane Hill. I'm the MnDOT District Engineer for Northeastern Minnesota. Our districts are numbered, and we're District 1 in Northeastern Minnesota.
Mr. Hill, you may answer Representative Detmer's question.
All right. So we have a rock catchment system mm-hmm. at Silver Cliff, and we have had a lot of rock spalling off the portals of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. Typically, that happens in the springtime
right.
As the frost is coming out, and there's a lot of water flowing through the rock.
Mm-hmm.
And we've modified the catchment system several times. The most recent one, we increased the height of our jersey barrier along the highway and put gabion baskets behind it so that as the rocks bounce down the face of the portal, they will bounce off of the backside of those the barrier and the gabion baskets.
Come
it's true, sometimes they do make it out onto the highway, mm-hmm. and we end up cleaning up small pieces of rock off the highway fairly often.
Mr. Chair, just a comment, if you would ever have gone up through that area of the state, you know, you get north of Duluth, and then you get into God's country, and Silver Bay, and then Beaver Bay, or two harbors, Beaver Bay, Silver Bay, but there's some cuts where they cut through for Highway 61, and there's water flowing down onto the sides of the wall of the rocks. It's just beautiful with the frozen water. Sometimes you got to just stop and take pictures of it. It's a beautiful, beautiful drive.
Well, Representative Edmund, you always told me that Forest Lake was God's country.
Well, yeah, you know, but you got to have another place to go too, you know. So,
thank you, Representative Ekman. We're wondering, what is the position with the PFA on this? Where are you on their list? What's your name on that?
We're on the list, and the project has been steadily climbing the list. I don't know the exact number where it's at in PFA right now.
Okay, that certainly will be something to consider. Other questions of Representative Eklund regarding this particular proposal? Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize. I had to step out and see some constituents. So I may have missed this, but from the engineering perspective and everything else, are we sizing this project for future expansion? If you get a little bit of new commercial development, another resort or whatever, are we going to be assured that we don't have to come back and rebuild the system and increase capacity?
Certainly, we have sized this for future expansion. That's always built in. You know, you're looking 20 years into the future. Our engineers have taken that into consideration. We have had an issue in the past where when we built our first system, we sized that for a commercial venture that was going to go into that area. It didn't happen, and it was, so we were overbuilt in that area. We haven't seen the big flow into that area either, in the Castle Danger area. That's at Green Prairie Falls State Park, serves the park and that surrounding area.
And Mr. Hoops, do you have to acquire any land for this project? Has a pre-design been done?
Pre-design has been done. We own the land where we're going to site the wastewater treatment facility. And then, of course, we'll just do easements on homeowners' property for the collection lines, easements on the highway right of way.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, thank you, gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce Dwayne Hill, the District 1 engineer. He'd like to speak.
Okay, you're going to testify, that's fine.
All right, I was asked to provide a little bit of feedback about Highway 61. So, first of all, I'm the district engineer at MnDOT. Again, I've been in that role for 6 years, and I've worked for MnDOT for almost 27 years. And early on in my career, MnDOT was working on reconstructing segments of Highway 61 between Two Harbors and Grand Marais. And we desired to address the safety issues that occurred at Silver Cliff and at Lafayette Bluff, and we did that by building tunnels so that the road that was hung along the edge of the cliff was not in a precarious situation. And then on the rest of the corridor, we tried to add better alignment, profile, and shoulders for safety. And we started trying to work from Two Harbors going north because the traffic volume is highest on the south end of this corridor. As we started working on design of the highway from Two Harbors to Silver Cliff Tunnel, one of the first obstacles we faced as we collected construction limits and started to determine our right-of-way needs was that all of the septic systems for the homes on the upper side of Highway 261 drained towards the highway. And in order to reconstruct the roadway, we would have to basically total take every home on the upper side of the road. And that caused us to stop working on developing a highway reconstruction project in this area.
The traffic volume on Highway 61 in this area is about 6,000 cars a day. The shoulders are 3 to 4 feet wide. There's no place for pedestrians and bicycles in this corridor. There's not a wide enough shoulder to pull off the roadway. The profile is really, there's a lot of elevation change in the profile, and you don't have a very good stopping site distance. And all those things lead up to a high crash rate in this corridor. So there's a need to consider a safety improvement by reconstructing this corridor and widening the shoulders. But we really can't contemplate that until the sewer system issue is addressed. So this year we're going to do a mill and overlay in the corridor for a significant portion of it just to keep the pavement condition in a smooth, acceptable manner for the public. And in 2020 we're going to work on a bridge at Silver Creek, which is near the very end of the project. And we're also going to be, and we're going to replace that bridge. And in 2020, we're also going to be rehabilitating the bridge over the Stewart River, which is right near Betty's Pies. And that project includes trying to do safety improvements at the intersection of the driveway at Betty's Pies, because there's so many movements going in and out of their parking lot. And then also at County Road 3, which has got a history of some really tragic car crashes. So this, potentially the sewer system project would fit well with those bridge projects.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And sir, will you be looking to do, once this is going to be in design, would you be doing a four-lane or does a three-lane roadway up there work?
Mr. Hill.
I think a two-lane roadway with adequate shoulders is what we would intend to build. And make sure that we have turn lanes at appropriate locations.
Okay, thank you.
Do you have another testifier?
Well, Mr. Chair, that's it.
Any other comments or questions? Then thank you very much. Representative Eklund, do you want to proceed with your next bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And please thank your L.A. for her help today. And you, Representative Eklund, for that fine treat.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. Without my L.A., I wouldn't get any of this done. So. Mr. Chair, members, House File 3164 is a proposed campground project for the City of Babbitt. City of Babbitt is a city of approximately 1,500 people. And the old adage of northern Minnesota is taconite tourism and timber. And so the City of Babbitt has a taconite plant, North Shore Mining, and I apologize, North Shore Mining, which supplies taconite ore to Silver Bay where it's processed. And so what we're trying to do is bring the tourism aspect to the City of Babbitt. And this project will provide a campground of approximately 49 units on Birch Lake. Birch Lake is the entrance, one of the entrances to the Boundary Waters school area. Two portages from Birch Lake and you're into the Boundary Waters. And it's for those of you who haven't been there, it's one of the big, beautiful lakes in my district, in northern Minnesota. I'm certainly proud of it. And with that, I'm going to turn it over the presentation to the Mayor of Babbitt, the Honorable Mayor Andreas Duponich.
Welcome, Mayor.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, as you mentioned, I'm Andreas Duponich with the City of Babbitt, the Mayor. And our town is a very small town. We don't have a lot of businesses, and it's very hard for us to gain any additional tax revenue, potential, anything. We have maybe five businesses in town. But this being a municipal owned recreational area, we're going to take advantage of the different trails that are all in the area, the ATV, the bikes, the hiking, boating. We just completed the new landing. That's right there in your packets. You should all have the packets. And if you don't, just, you know, yep, that one. So we want to make this an all-around campsite. It'll have recreational campsites as well as seasonal campsites, about 25 and 24. with electricity and Wi-Fi, of course, because that also seems to be the trend that people need to have. So we don't want to make it too hard for them. We're hoping that the visitors will be frequenting our golf course, the businesses in town, gas stations, grocery store, bars, restaurants, etc. And then again, helping the city to obtain some revenue. We have limited resources because the mine is in our town, and we do get some of the taconite tax, but really with the additional monies that we need to try and save our arena, other infrastructure, we're hoping that this goes this way. And then also we are going to have city sewer and water going out that way, and we're hoping that the residential areas will also tap into the city sewer and water options.
All right. Any questions or comments of the mayor? What's the population?
Exactly 1491, so we're just shy of 1500.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Mayor, could I just ask how you say there will be non-state funds matching, and how is that coming? Are you in the process of fundraising?
Oh, yes, definitely. We're doing every avenue that we can to help with the funding of this project. We've already started. This project itself has been started, I want to say, in the late 80s when Reserve Mine actually closed down, and there are a bunch of laid-off miners. They started developing this 40-acre parcel. The road kind of cuts it off, so it's like 32 on one side and 8 on the other. And the city had always had this in the back of their mind to develop this area as a campsite area. We have now, as a council, finally gone forward with it. We've been kicking it around a couple years now, and just really we need to try and get a little bit more progressive and try to get more people into our town. And so with this initial start of designing, as you can see the designs in your packets, the next step, once we get this bonding, is then to, we've already looked at the different grant options and things.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And will there be a contribution from the IRRB, did you say, or?
We are looking not only at the IRRB, we're looking at, we have four or five different... The Minnesota Parks and Trails, St. Louis County, in addition to the city sewer lines, I think that's coming from St. Louis County, right? Yeah. So, yes. Thank you. Different various options.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the mayor, would you characterize this project as shovel-ready? I mean, if you receive the funding and things, when would the start date be?
Mayor.
Yes, thank you. Our anticipated start date, once everything is all in place, is 2019. Just because of how the season is and everything that needs to be done, we would be able to start some projects with clearing of land, I believe, in the fall of 2018, provided all the funding is in.
Other questions or comments? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, sure. Madam Mayor, you mentioned the sewer and water, and I couldn't quite hear what you said. Is that part of the request, or would that be something the city is providing? I just didn't hear your response earlier.
Okay, sure. I'm sorry, I'm not used to. Yes, it is included in the request. However, if you'd like to give us additional money, that would be more than welcome and appreciated.
Just looking, Mr. Chairman, for clarification.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Okay, well, any final words? Representative Eklund.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members, for listening. This campsite project for Babbitt, I think, would be critical in helping them at least stabilize their economy. And we always hear about diversity, diversifying the economy, and with the mining system, our mining economy sometimes up and down, this will certainly help them out. So I appreciate the time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next up, House File 492 and Representative Dale Lewick.
Thank you.
drive it for some beer. You couldn't park a dog for half hour.
Representative Lewick, you want to introduce your bill to us, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, members. House File 492 would fund a major portion, $1.5 million, on a expansion of what we call the Northwoods Regional ATV Trail System. That's a over 200-mile system that's in our part of the state. Reaches well up into Representative Eklund's part of the state, as well as to the south, and we're talking about a 58-mile addition. It would be, we call it the Mille Lacs Lake Malmo East Loop, and it would be essentially located on the east side of Mille Lacs Lake. For those of you that were on the tour last summer and had the opportunity to take just a little jaunt out on some of our ATV trails in the area. You look up here on your map at Hill City, you are quite a ways from this particular area, but that gives you an idea of how big and expansive this 200-mile Northwoods ATV trail system. You were up on the Hill City connector trail, but that is part of the same system that we want to expand. And also, if you take a look at the big box here on the east side of Mille Lacs Lake, you'll note that except for that big red squiggly line, there are no ATV trails in that immediate area. That Northwoods Trail just grazes the south side of Mille Lacs Lake, and then it heads well east. So to give you an idea of where we're talking about, what, 58 miles, it's clearly on the east side of the lake. The reason, there's two reasons we need to do that. One, on the merits, completely independent of the economic situation, this is an absolutely excellent addition for this 200-mile trail system. And the problem with that is our grant and aid system for building ATV trails, snowmobile trails, the whole works, is a fairly long-term process, and we're talking maybe 15 years or more. And we've been working on this for a while, but it takes a long time to put something like this on the ground, specifically because of funding. We know how to build trails in our part of the state. We've been doing it, literally a pioneer, for many years. The second part, and I'll let Mr. Kulify, Steve Kulify, owner of Red Door Family Resort, speak to that a little more. The second part of this is, if you remember last year, the year before, we did some economic assistance to the Mille Lacs Lake area, and we spent $4 million specifically on grants and low-interest loans to deal with the economic situation, because kind of like my friend, Representative Eklund, things go up and down with the taconite world. Well, things go up and down on Mille Lacs Lake with the walleye fishery, and obviously we're not at the top of the our game right now. That's stable, but it's got a ways to go. So this second reason, this particular project is really important, is it puts permanent economic development, diversifying that economy around Mille Lacs. We're one of the greatest recreational areas in the state. We've got a huge amount of lodging, and if we don't have it full of walleye fishermen, I can tell you what, we can definitely fill up a lot of that lodging, particularly through the summer, with folks that ride ATVs. That is a huge growing sport throughout Minnesota, and it's not just kind of middle-aged folks. You see a lot of older folks, particularly those of you who experience a side-by-side machine. That's something that a couple can go out for a ride in the woods. So anyway, that's two reasons. One, this would merit a trail expansion on its own. Problem there is the time it takes. Second thing is, this is a much more practical way to put some economic vitality back in the area by expanding the recreational opportunities. But what I'd like to do is my testifier can speak to what we do around Mille Lacs Lake and why this would be particularly important to our part of the lake in particular.
Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself, please. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Steve Kulafi. I'm the owner of the Red Door Resort and Motel and operator, as well as a member of the Mille Lacs Area's Fishery Advisory Committee. I think the importance of this bill, which Representative Luke touched so well on, is the fact that a big part of the future of this area from a socioeconomic standpoint is going to be the diversification of what we can do around the resource. The walleye depletion, and we were recently told that the walleye is in fact returning somewhat, but at this point with the agreement that takes place on Mille Lacs at this time, there's a lot less biological influence and more of a management style challenge that I think is going to go on long term, and something that we're seeing. And from a business standpoint, it's made a significant difference to many of the businesses. And this not only affects hundreds of businesses right around Mille Lacs, but home values, thousands of outside businesses that do service the area. And it's put a lot of economic hardship to the point where dozens of businesses are actually closing the doors and people are walking away from the area. Without that bit of hope or that sunshine at the end of the tunnel that everybody's looking for, the importance of this bill is exactly that, and I've been with the Red Door Resort and Motel for 5 years now. And when I first came to the area, it was a fall, and I thought it was really intriguing to me. I'm an avid outdoorsman, snowmobiler, ATVer, etc. And I had the opportunity to take a trip down to the southeast side of the lake, and at a time where there was nobody at the Red Door in our cabins or motels, one of the resorts on the very southeast side of the lake had numerous trailers and recreational vehicles down there enjoying where they could hook onto the trails. So the opportunity to be able to add a trail system up along the east side of the lake, as well as, and I hope in the future, along the north side of the lake as well, can really help expand and diversify our resources, diversify the number of people coming to the area to enjoy the beauty of the Mille Lacs area, and help reduce some of the socioeconomic challenges that have come to the area due to the walleye decline. So in closing, I thank Representative Luke for working on this bill and not only helping to, for us business owners, to help diversify the opportunities for recreation in the area, but again, to potentially give us some hope for a better future.
Well, thank you. Any comments or questions? Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Luke, I was wondering, could you tell me, of the 58 miles, is all the land been purchased, leased, the easements in place? Is all that set and ready to go?
Representative Luke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The vast majority of it is, roughly two-thirds of those miles would cross already existing state and county tax forfeit land. One of the things that Aiken County just recently did was made an adjustment to their local ATV ordinance, which actually opens up a portion of the county gravel roads that weren't previously open to ATV traffic. So that's part of the cost. There's actually a lot of the paperwork involved, and that's going through. There are some places where we're certainly going to have to get some easement. Very few. This is predominantly in a pretty remote area. In fact, it'll cruise through two unorganized townships. One of the townships doesn't have any single resident. So that's frankly the least of our issues. The other thing is that, expand a little more on that, big pieces of this already exist because we've been logging that area for over 100 years. So we've got forest roads that we run bulldozers and trucks down all the time. We've just got to tidy them up a little bit and put some signposts out there. So this is one that the least of our issues is going to be actually doing the physical work. We just got to get the funding and go through. You know, we'll certainly do all the ecological surveys that are necessary to do this right. The other thing I wanted to mention is this has got broad support, statewide support. the state ATVAM, State Association for ATVs. They've looked at that, and there's three different trails systems like this, projects in Minnesota, two of them, I believe, up in Representative Eklund's district, and this one that they have highlighted is really, you know, ready to go and important things we do. So we've got from local support right on up, broad statewide support for this.
Other questions or comments? Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Look, thank you. I can foresee the our trails groups getting together, these different clubs, and eventually all these trails are going to be interconnected in northern Minnesota and provide a real tourism boost to our economy.
Well, we certainly enjoyed our visit there and our ATV rides, and we'll look forward to see what happens here. Anything else? Representative Rundbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if the testifier, what is the, where's your inn, or what did you call it? Where is that located?
It's located right on the central section of northern, the north side of Mille Lacs.
And, so, and what town is it?
It is in a little area called Wealthwood in Aiken County.
Say the name again?
It's called Wealthwood.
Wealthwood.
Wealthwood. Smack dab right in the middle of the north side of Mille Lacs.
Huh. All right. Thank you.
You wish to conclude, Representative Lewick?
Yes, but I would like to speak just a little more on the great town of Wealthwood. My grandmother used to walk to school and went to school there. There is still a Wealthwood Town Hall now, which used to be the school, but you literally have to kind of been born and raised where to know where Wealthwood is. But no, I just want to thank the committee and the testifier who came from up north, and we'll just ask for your support.
Thank you. And last but not least today, we have Representative Juergens with House File 1895. Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1895 is the restoration for the Hastings City Hall. The original paperwork, the original bill, has the wrong amount on it. It says $7 million. The actual ask for the bonding request is $1.5 million. So a bargain like that, I don't know how you can turn it down, Mr. Chair. Most of you were on the bonding tour last year, so you're familiar with the project. It was a beautiful old building, the second oldest courthouse in the state, now used as the Hastings City Hall. If you look at a distance, you see how beautiful it is. When you look up close, you'll be able to see the chipping of some of the limestone and the brick and the other work there. And as we know from the beautiful restoration of our Capitol, what a little tender loving care can do to an old building. So with me today from the City of Hastings is City Administrator Melanie Mesko-Lee, and to testify is Justin Fortney from the City of Hastings.
Hello, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Justin Fortney, City Planner for the City
Welcome
of Hastings.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. The historic Dakota County Courthouse, now City Hall, was finished construction in 1871 with a narrow Gothic-style dome, which needed a full replacement in 1912. That is roofed with a galvanized steel paneling that's just needed to be painted over the last 106 years. Other than that, it hasn't needed any work. The underlayment underneath that galvanized steel is dry rotting, and the galvanized steel panels are corroding from within. The soft Hastings brick that makes up the building needs to be replaced in many sections because of the soft nature of the brick. from many years of at the elements and from past drilling for attaching different things to the building in different areas. Also, a lot of the lower brick is gets a lot more wet and dries more slowly, and so a lot of the brick along the bottom of the building needs to be replaced, as you can see in some of the pictures. Some of the a lot of the brick was replaced in the 1970s for a similar project, and those areas are still in good condition. Areas that weren't done are needing work at this time, along with a lot of areas of the mortar between the brick starting to get soft and also in falling out. It needs to be repointed, and a lot of the stonework on the building is a sedimentary stone, limestone, that absorbs a lot of water and during the winter will crack. And if you look around the building this time of year, when the snow is melting, you can find pieces of especially the stone that has fallen off and is on the ground, along with some brick pieces. Our proposal is to replace the stonework that is severely deteriorated, and all the stonework would be cleaned and have a water repellent applied to it to keep water from going into the stonework. It's a new type of coating that's breathable, so when the moisture comes from the backside of the stone, from humidity and other reasons, it can evaporate out of the stone. The foundation and site grading is required to lower the humidity in the basement and building from a lot of drainage coming through the foundation, along with the HVAC system needing improvements to further lower the high humidity inside the building, which has led to other issues. Along with the uses tying the buildings on the public square together, the HVAC system also ties in to all the buildings on the site. The citizens in the area value the public square as a historic asset to the community and also the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, just a quick one, Mr. Chairman. I was reading your handout here, and if I'm reading it correctly, the current roof was put in 1912?
That's correct, Representative.
Mr. Fortney.
Thank you. The original dome that was on the building was a narrow Gothic style, and it needed total replacement. The whole dome and tower structure was replaced in 1912. And as far as we know, there hasn't been any roofing work needed to that 1912 dome other than painting.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this committee and its predecessor appropriations, we spent a ton on roofs, and none of them seemed to ever last 100 year plus. Seriously, some of them were on some of our public buildings were frequently replaced. Is that a tile roof by chance, or
it's
Mr. Fortney?
I think it's a galvanized steel roof.
Oh, it's a steel roof. Okay, maybe that's a signal. That's for the future, bad. Mr. Chairman. Yeah. 100 year plus roof.
Maybe. another testifier? Representative Jurgens?
No, Mr. Chair, but there may be other questions.
Other questions? Other comments? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Radin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you started by saying it's dropped from $7 million to $1.5 million. Can you explain to me how that happens?
Representative Jurgens.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, it was a mistake on the original bill last year. I think $7 million might have been the full project price or something like that, but it should be $1.5
million. Dean.
So the project, as I see on this sheet, is still a $7.6 million project?
Please identify yourself.
Thank you. Melanie Mescalise, City Administrator. The entire project, so we're looking at the entire project, which includes the police station and the whole, there's a one-block campus that we're looking at. And that entire project, including some of the elements that we're not including in this proposal. So that includes some interior renovations, which we are not asking for the state to partner with.
Thank you, Mr.
Dean.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? If any others of you can find bills where we drop, you know, $6-7 million, that would be a good deal.
Let me inflate it first.
Yeah.
Anything else? Seeing nothing else, we will be meeting again tomorrow at 3 o'clock. But until then, well, King, this case is closed.